This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled today. Before I start and introduce my guest, I just want to thank both Devon Miller and Bria Burton for taking over last week while I was in Texas. And I was having a good fun in Texas. It's always great to get back there. And so I was having lots of fun. And I want to thank them both for taking over last week here at Joy on Paper. I know they had so much fun. They told me when I came back, they said, well, you know, you could go on vacation every month. They'd be happy to sit here. But now I am back in my seat and I am behind the microphone and I am so excited to welcome, well, he's practically royalty, Baron Bircher. And the name of his book is The Reckoning. And I am so happy to talk to you, Baron.
Well, it's a delight to be here with you.
Well, you know, I love a man in a cowboy hat. Any man in a cowboy hat can get on my program, and you look so good in yours.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
Well, where do I start with you? You are a writer's writer. You are brilliant. I feel humble in front of you because there's, you know, you are something special, I tell you. I know you're award-winning, but I don't think you've won enough awards because your writing is incredible.
Well, that coming from you really means the world.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I was reading the book. You know, I read your other books too. You send me so many, thank you. But I'm sitting there reading Reckoning, and I'm reading it, and I mean, I knew within a page or two that, you know, you're brilliant. And I kept going, and I kept thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know, this is so wonderful. And then I got to page 50, and I just put the book down, and I started crying. I just started crying. When a book just is so touching. And it was shortly after that scene about the lake and a combination of that story and the way you told it and how you brought your characters to life for me, I just needed to pause. Now, if it hadn't been 11 o'clock in the morning, I might have even needed a shot at Jim Beam. But
well, that might have been what the characters would have done.
That's what happens with me. I'm always influenced by whatever the characters are eating or reading, or drinking, and so with Jim Beam, there is a special. It has a special. It does go down at the right time.
That is a fact.
So you have just this series is terrific, and this book is particularly, as I said, it's because you create the atmosphere. We feel like we're there. So you tell us about this book and tell us about Ty Dawson, the sheriff who, well, I tell you, he's a standout character.
Well, he is a really dear character in my imagination, that's for sure. The book is set in the 70s. The series is set in the 1970s, and it's set in rural Oregon. And the world around the people that have been enjoying this lifestyle that is essentially the same as it's been since the turn of the century is suddenly changing now at the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And there's a lot to digest for this small town agrarian community. And that's kind of the atmosphere in which the Ty Dawson mysteries take place.
And decisions are made about this area. They're made in Washington, D.C., where these people don't even know what a cow is anymore.
Well, what's interesting is I don't think that a lot of people know, particularly on the eastern U.S. The western U.S., over 50% of the land is controlled by government agencies. And there are some states like Nevada and some others that are in excess of 60% of all of the land in the entire state is controlled and operated by the federal government. So they control who gets the leases in order to graze cattle or to not graze or do anything at all. So there's a considerable amount of control exercised from D.C. over a lot of agrarian businesses.
And they don't know anything, I can tell you.
There's just, if nothing else, there's a sheer distance problem, let alone a cultural problem.
Well, that's why I've always thought that a lot of those agencies should be just broken up and scattered around the country because they don't understand. And I come from northern Michigan. Now, we don't have as much problem, but boy, we have problems. And we sure know that cows need water,
Well, they need water and they need some grass to eat. some basics.
Yeah, and if they don't have it, they're going to die. And when you get people like this, and you know, I know that your characters are real because there are real people like this. I've come across some of them in our own family. We have a farm. You know, we don't call them ranches. Northern Michigan, but we know about regulations and the cruelty sometimes that goes into the decisions that are made.
Well, it's true, and sometimes it's inadvertent, and sometimes maybe not so much. What's interesting about reckoning is I borrowed a bit of history, real historical events, in order to kind of put guardrails on this story. And by guardrails, I mean, because I'm writing stories about the 70s and because I'm writing fiction, I do like to try to make it remain within the lines of what the real world was like in the 70s. As such, if I can kind of tie something to a historical event, then there are, you know, guardrails to the story, so I can't run too far amok. This one borrows some history from a more recent event, which took place in the Malheur Wildlife Refuge in Oregon back in the early 2000s. And if you may remember, there was a takeover of a federal refuge by a handful of people, and the FBI came out, and it turned into a brouhaha. People got killed. It was quite a mess. And this was all fomented by something very, very similar to this, where a federal agency was applying some strong-arm tactics on a cattle ranch.
And, yeah, I like that it's set in that era because, first of all, we don't have texts and we don't have cell phones, so it's sort of refreshing. I'm getting so many books where half the pages are texts, you know?
Well, and it's really hard for me now when I'm watching those kind of shows on TV. It's like, I can't read that text right there.
I know. They have it on screen, and they have it now in books. I got one book recently, like, I think maybe every 10 pages, there were two pages of text, and I didn't enjoy it. I really did. I like it once in a while, but there's a limit. And this, really, I didn't want those cowboys texting. They probably texted now, but...
they would be now, but not in my book.
But back then, in your book, they're real they're real guys, and they're tough, and they're great, and Ty is wonderful. And you write about him, as you said, obviously... this is somebody you love and care about, and all the characters around him. And I like the references to the Vietnam War in the way that you do it, because there was a little bit of a different attitude for the guys who returned, and it was very difficult time for them. But they were a little bit more silent about what they went through, and your writing really reflects that.
Well, in other words, there was a societal treatment of those veterans that was considerably different than now, and frankly, shameful. So those guys risked their lives and came home and were treated with a certain amount of scorn and just kind of had to be quiet about it because they weren't allowed to be proud of their service. And, you know, it's arguable as to whether we should have been there in the first place and all that other stuff. But regardless of the politics that sent them there, these people went there. They didn't have a choice.
No, they didn't. In those days, they could run off to Canada, I guess.
Yeah, right. You could run away and then, you know, become a girl.
But, Ty is just such a great character, and his wife is fantastic. You know, your book is filled with these delightful little scenes that are so memorable that I know that years from now, I will think about them. I will imagine them. And one of my favorite scenes is just a simple where he comes home for dinner and she's been waiting for him. And you describe, you know, him lighting a candle and the teardrop shape of the flame and how he has a linen napkin and a goblet. And so we're out there in the West, but we know that, you know, these people are really civilized. Sometimes people don't, you know, they're going to imagine that they're all drinking out of tin cans all day long. And I love that. I love that. I love the way it's a simple scene, nothing, you know, it just came to you some way. But it's so real. I loved it.
Well, there's a considerable amount of my dad built into Ty Dawson. So he is a very real character to me in a lot of ways, and he grounds me when I write it.
Well, your dad was something.
Well, he was, and the scene that you're referring to, what I like about Ty and his wife, Jessie, is they really love each other, and they really respect each other. And Jessie is an independent, strong woman in her own right. And I like that Ty, the cowboy sheriff, respects his independent wife as much as he respects his own cowboys. And in the 70s, that wasn't necessarily normal.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, it was nascent, let's say that.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, they have a daughter, and I like how how she's in the story. Again, all of your characters, all of the people around him are interesting, and, of course, the story is about, and I won't give it away, but it's about this farmer who's really facing this challenge that his land, he's been cut off from the ability to get water for his cows, and that's a heartbreaking thing. And his name is Casey, and I very, you know, very touching. And I think that's why, you know, when I got to that page 50 and I put the book down, I just was overcome with emotion.
Well, that really means a lot to me because I like to thread emotion into these books because it's the third dimension. It's the reality that I like to experience when I'm reading a really good book. I want to get drawn all the way in.
So, now, do you live in this area?
I do. I live in the area that I write about. I live in the Willamette Valley. I'm a little actually north of where Ty Dawson lives, but that's a minor detail. So I know the territory well, and I know the weather, and I know the how it smells and looks and feels, and I know what the rivers look like, and it's a beautiful place.
Well, yes, because you describe it so beautifully, and I think when somebody's reading this book, they're there, and I really felt it. I felt it so strongly, just the way you described the sky, the trees, everything. It sent my mind, you know, just in a new dimension, and I loved it. I just loved it, and
thank you.
You know, I get. This happens sometimes when I'm reading a book and I see it so clearly, and I think to myself, oh gee, I wish I would win the lottery, and the first thing I do is I would option this book.
Bless your heart.
And I would film it the right way because.
I'm sorry.
No, go on.
I was going to ask, do we have 10 or 15 seconds where I could just read the opening passage to the book?
Yes, that would be fantastic. I would love it. Go ahead.
This is the setup for the book. It's a little prelude before the story proper starts, and it's called A Transitive Nightfall. No child is brought into this world with any knowledge of truth or evil. This they learn over the passage of time. In my experience as a sheriff and as a rancher, I have found this precept to be true. Time passes nevertheless, even if it passes slowly. Here in rural southern Oregon, sometimes it seemed as if it hadn't moved at all, advancing without touching Meriwether County, except with glancing blows. That is, until the day it caught up with us all and came down like a hammer.
It was beautiful paragraph, and when I read it, I was thinking, I always check everything out, who the quotes that you use, and of course, the dedication too. I always look at that, and I want to get the feeling of the author and what they're trying to accomplish, and you certainly have accomplished it with this book. The story, you have this philosophical bent of trying to understand human beings. Good luck, but you do accomplish a lot in this book, and of course it also touches on good and evil, and unfortunately there's a lot of evil out there. And sometimes you wonder how people can treat each other the way they do.
Well, this is the thing that we get to explore when we're writing, especially crime fiction, right?
Yeah, and you do a beautiful job of it.
Well, I really appreciate that. Like I said, coming from you, I know how much you read and how well-read you are. And to hear those kinds of compliments from you is very meaningful to me, and I appreciate it.
Well, what authors influenced you the most?
You know, I have a handful, and they come from a lot of different genres. I like Philip Caputo, who talks about the Vietnam War better than almost anyone I know. I think won a Pulitzer Prize for it. I love the playwright Sam Shepard. I love Cormac McCarthy, and of course. C.J. Box, contemporary C.J. Box, and Craig Johnson doing the Longmire things. I have a pretty wide breadth of interest in terms of reading. And I love historical fiction. James Michener.
That's one of my favorite. And, of course, C.J. Box has been on the program many times, I think, for every release he's had in the past. I've been on 8 years. I think for every release he's had for the past 8 years he's been on.
Well, he's terrific, and he captures his world, and you're there.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's why when I actually thought about C.J. Box when I was reading this book, and I was imagining how I would make the movie and how I would work very hard to capture Ty. I just like Ty so much.
Well, I do too, and every time I write a new book, I get to know him better. He reveals himself a little more to me, and his relationship with his wife Jessie and with his daughter Cricket, who's in college and she's facing 1970s issues of her own. And you know, I'm a 70s kid myself, so it's fun to just travel back in time. And if I did these books right, it should be a time machine. And if you were there, it should feel like the real deal.
Well, exactly. And what I, because I've had quite a bit of experience with Vietnam veterans. I've been working on a project, a Vietnam veteran project for years, trying to get it done. And so I dealt a lot and interviewed so many Vietnam vets over the years. And that's why I was particularly moved by the way you handled that area, where you're talking about what they went through and what they remember, and just that was so good. It was like I was talking to many of the vets that I've spoken to over the years since I've been involved in this project about Vietnam. And yes, you know, well, I sometimes it's overwhelming when you think about what happened there, because in many ways, one of the things that I think was perhaps worse, and it was what my father said. My father was in D-Day, and he was in Germany. And at the end of, you know, the war in Europe, he was sent to, back, you know, came home to America. And he was on leave, and he had 10 days, and he was supposed to head over to San Francisco to head to the Pacific War.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember my father said, I could take the other one, but I just couldn't take. I don't know what I would have done if I had to go into the jungle and be among snakes.
Exactly. I already fought a war.
Yeah. That was too much. And I think sometimes people don't realize how, for American boys to land up in some place like that, there were so many levels of horror.
Well, you know, when we think about just the human experience, we don't have to go to war in order to have psychic scars. You know, if you have a car accident, you could be thinking about that for years, and it kind of colors the way you think about driving. So that's a reality of the human experience. What happens if you are in a shooting war, and what happens if you are terrified to your core in the middle of a jungle or wherever you may be, and you've got hostile enemies shooting at you, trying to kill you, people you don't even know?
Well,
I think that would color the way you sleep at night for a while.
For a long time. And unfortunately, you know, as this book is set in the 70s, the problems of the bureaucrats and the corruption has not improved, I don't think.
Well, you know, there was a lot of mistrust in the government that we learned in the 70s. You know, I think a lot of us, myself included, when you hear that the president was recording things and the president's misbehaving and stuff, that doesn't happen. This is America. Sadly, yes, it does.
Well, yeah, I know, it does. But I hope that, you know, you're having, obviously, you're having a fun time writing these books.
It's a time machine, Patsy.
Yeah.
It is, for me. I get to go to the office and disappear into a different time.
And I really want everybody out there to get this book. One of the things that I think they will discover from reading your books, all of them, but particularly this one, to sort of stop and think about when they get to that page 50, that we have to know about these things. And if we don't know about these things, if we don't know what's happening, and for me, it's in northern Michigan where they're cutting down all the trees willy-nilly, and And they're getting government approval to cut down the trees willy-nilly, where we on our land, you know, we ache when we cut down the trees that need to be cut down, but we I mean, it's hard for us. We can't cut down the tree.
Even if you're going to use them for firewood, it's like
exactly. We love them, and they're doing that in northern Michigan today. And it's horrible, and it's just biofuel. They call it biofuel. Honey, right. I'm telling you, you just cut down a walnut tree, for goodness sakes, and you're burning in it. You know, they're crazy. They're crazy.
Yeah, if we're worried about CO2 and oxygen and the balance and all that stuff, I think trees are probably a good idea.
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, just like the officials in your book, the government officials, they don't know that, you know, a cow needs water. They don't know that northern Michigan needs trees. That's why.
This is hopefully what I can impart through the Ty Dawson series is, while you and I have been talking here a bit about Vietnam and about the BLM and land management and so forth, while there is a political thread that kind of pulls the story along, it is not a political story, and it's a very action-oriented story, and it's very steep in its time, the 1970s, and it's very Western in its dialogue experience, I hope. But if you set something in the 1970s, the atmosphere, the air you breathed, was rife with all of that stuff. It was all full of Vietnam. It was full of Watergate. It was full of politics. You couldn't avoid it.
Well, you know, the book is, it's so many things on so many levels, and people can just get so much out of this book. It's also this lovely love story that's sort of woven in there, and that makes you feel good. And the patriotism of those people who care about the land and about each other, that also comes out. So I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. The name of the book is Baron Bircher's Reckoning. And Baron Bircher, I think you're terrific.
Well, bless your heart, Patsy, you are too. And thank you for having me on today. It's been
a delight. When's the next book coming out?
Reckoning comes out in September.
Yeah.
It's available for pre-order right now at a discount, by the way.
Okay, that's important.
And there are two prior Ty Dawson novels that came out in the previous years that you can get, of course, and you can catch up. There's time to catch up.
Okay, well, we will. You'll come back in September when it's released, okay?
Absolutely, I would be delighted.
Okay, meanwhile, I'm going to keep telling people to pre-order this book because it is terrific.
Thank you, Patsy. Thanks.
It's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, this book. Oh, that's what the wonderful thing about being the host. I get the book so much sooner than everybody else. Okay. We have a wonderful book buzz from, I want to thank Devon Miller again for taking over last week. And here's his book buzz.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Something that I consider amazing is being kind. You know who else considers being kind amazing? Harold! Yes, Harold returns in his third and final adventure with the book Harold the Amazing, which was written and illustrated by Calvin Reynolds. Harold the Amazing is a story about how being kind to others makes you amazing. Within the book, Harold shows examples of how acts of kindness can help one become a better person. Read along as Harold shows examples of how acts of kindness can help you become an amazing person. Calvin Reynolds is not only an author and illustrator, but is also a graphic designer. When writing Harold the Amazing, he figured it would be a great time to remind kids to just be kind and that common courtesy is important. In Harold the Amazing, we see that Harold feels like he's a superhero because he's doing kind things for other people. You can also feel like a superhero when you do kind things too. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy, and I am back with my next guests. I have two of them. Oh my goodness, this is exciting. And the name of their book is called The Better Half, and I have both of them, Allie Frank, I hope, and Aisha Humans. Hi, are you there?
We're here. This is Asha.
We're here.
Asha, I'm sorry, Asha. Yeah.
Okay.
Asha, and it's Humans?
Yeomans.
Okay, we got it now. I'm so happy to have the two of you here. You know, I was looking at your picture this morning. I was thinking to myself, my goodness, these two should be, either they should be picked to advertise dentists, or they should be picked to advertise lipstick, because you two have the biggest smiles. You are so beautiful.
Oh, that is so kind of you. Let me tell you, I think those smiles come from the work we do together. We have so much fun.
Well, obviously, I mean, you look so happy, and that I thought, well, that's joy. I got joy. I have two joys here today.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that's our mission too, is to write about things that give our readers joy and give us joy as writers.
Well, who's going to start? Who wants to tell the first part about this, how this book came about? As I said, it's called The Better Half, and you are each both.
Definitely each other's professional better half. We have our own personal better halves as well. But Asha, I'll let you start how we got this book going.
Well, this book was written very shortly after our first book, and we put it aside for a while. Our first book is called Tiny Imperfections. We wrote this book shortly after that. But in between, we put out another book called Never Meant to Meet You. And when we came back to The Better Half, we decided, you know, we want to rework it a little bit. So it's gone through a few iterations, but we think we came up with our favorite version of it, and it's available now.
Well, it's fantastic. It's a combination of... We get these, I love, during the summer, I get books about people going on vacation, and then they're discovering themselves. So that's always fun. Who wants to talk about the two the main characters?
I'll give that one to Asha.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Asha. So our main character, our main protagonist is Nina Morgan Clark, and she has, as a first-generation Jamaican immigrant, she has followed the words of her parents to a T to work hard in school, study hard in college, find a career, and march yourself towards a pinnacle of life. And much to the kind of the American tradition of arriving someplace. So she's 43, and she, in her mind, has arrived at her absolute dream of a job. She has a teenage daughter who is thriving at boarding school. She has a ex-husband who has thankfully moved across country. She has a best friend from childhood who is her confidant and her soul. And she has a father who, after several years of grieving the death of his wife, is coming back into a happy place himself. So she feels like everything is where it should be, and she has arrived. But as we all know, the reality is there's no such thing as actual arrival. There's always something on the other side. And sure enough, Nina is hit with many obstacles and challenges, all that seem perhaps detrimental at first, but also might turn out to steer her life so that the second half of her life is actually the better part of her life.
And, of course, as you mentioned, she's a head of a school, and both of you have this experience as being teachers, right?
Yes, 20 years each. For me, in classroom teaching, and for Allie, a combination of, gosh, all the grades and also administrative roles and being founder of a school. So we have perspectives from just the most amazing cross-section of America and life and generations. We see pregnant moms coming in and anticipate their little ones will someday be in our classrooms, all the way up to uncles and grandparents that come to art shows for the kids. So we see just a fabulous group of life experiences, and we draw a lot from for our writing from that.
And that's why I think it's so great. I think the parts where you're talking about the school and people who haven't ever been involved in a private school will find it so interesting also from that point of view, because you really capture the sort of ambience of what it's like to be working in a school.
Yes, but that, you know, we do capture the ambiance of a private school, but the truth is that one of the great experiences that every human in our country has is that everyone has been to school, and everyone has their own personal experience of that journey. So by setting, you know, our first three books, we veer with our fourth one that we just turned in, but by setting our books in school, there's always some heart and head connection for everyone that reads the book, or all our books, because everyone's been to school.
Well, not everyone. I'm a homeschool mom, so my boys never experienced it, partly because...
Yeah, but they still had ups and downs of challenging curriculum and figuring things out and...
But you do capture it, and it's wonderful. I think it was fascinating. That part was fascinating. Now, of course, I don't know where to go with this, because one of the things is, of course, it is being promoted as what. Do you want to talk about color? I mean, is that important to you? How do you want to promote this book? You're promoting this book. I'm sort of, I had hoped that we'd gotten colorblind by this point, that we wouldn't really care if one of the characters is black and one of the characters is white, one of the writers is black, one of the writers is white. I'm so far beyond that, but apparently the world isn't, or at least our world isn't here.
Well, I think Allie and I try to write from human experience first, and then we draw on those things that inform our perspective as individuals, our race, our gender, our sexual orientation, the neighborhood we come from, the region of the country where we come from. So I think most people would, who are persons of color, would appreciate that people can see us for our colors. So that informs them somewhat of our experience and make those connections easier to create. So we do write in one voice. It's not like Allie writes the white characters and I write the black characters, but we come together to create the dialogue and the experiences first from a human perspective, and then we discuss how the characters feel based on their background. And race certainly is an informing aspect of a person's experience that allows us to write authentically.
Well, that's why I
would just like to add, in our experience with, you know, just Asha and I, and everyone has their own individual experiences, but the term colorblind and aren't we past this and aren't we living in a colorblind world, often comes, that word is used from white people. And in fact, people of color, people of different religions, and whatnot, are very proud of their skin, proud of their race, proud of their religion. So we actually aren't huge advocates of this term and this idea of colorblindness, because it's something to be proud of, not to erase from an individual, but to show up into the world with pride and with love for who you are, how you present on the outside and who you are on the inside.
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing is, you know, I think if people just look at your picture on the book and they see this, they say, wow, you know, you're special. And we're all special in this way that we can get together and like the two of you working together so seamlessly that, as you said, you don't know who's writing what as you're reading this book, and you think, oh wow, this is just fantastic collaboration.
Yeah, you know, in our second appointment to meet you, it's largely about a black woman and a white woman who are apprehensive about crossing the fence line to each other as neighbors. And the work that Allie and I do, we're hoping to show everyone that true collaboration can happen across any line that is out there, if you're willing to sort of let some of those fences down.
Yeah, and we also, you know, for Asha and I, we have a mission with our writing that we do want to bring forward stories of race, religion, privilege, parenting, but we want to do it through a lens of humor and joy and laughter and love. There's so much entertainment from the book world to the television and film world out there that explores those topics through trauma and through drama, as if that's the only lens or avenue into learning about people who and groups who may be different than the reader or the viewer. But in fact, you can learn as heart forward by laughing and by enjoying good humor. And that's, you know, those smiles that you see in our author photo is because that is really who we are. Asha and I have challenging and difficult, hard conversations when we're writing, there's no way we can't. When you're creating and you're in such an intimate act of building a story. But we write and we lead with love and humor, and that's what we want to give out into the world.
And I think you do. You know, you're writing, as you said, it is. It's funny. Sometimes you're very silly. Just, you know, you almost, I found myself, there were times I was smiling so hard my jaw was hurting, and I loved it. And, you know, I think in which one, Meant to Meet You, you won a starred review from Publishers Weekly, and they talk there about, you know, the friendship between an African-American and a Jewish girl. You know, this is, for me, I related in many ways to your life, Allie, because you were raised in sort of the country and sort of a wild child, which was how I was raised in northern Michigan. And we moved to the city. And now when we moved from northern Michigan, where we had only one black man, and he was a friend of mine, and we moved to the city, and of course we moved to Detroit, and there were black people, and my first friend was the reason my first friend was black was that we were both hated by everybody else in the school, because I was a dumb northerner, and I talk like this, and this is how I talk up north, and we talk like this. And she came from the south, and she had a southern accent, and so they would make fun of us. So we ended up being best friends because, you know, we were different.
Yeah. I mean, there is a connection in otherness, right? And that is something to be explored, a topic to be explored, but also, as Asha liked to, and I like to, it's also something to be championed and, you know, to see as a beautiful part of who you are and not something to hide or mask. So in all our books, we have multiple types of people who might be considered others, but we put them front and forward as just these, you know, big, wonderful personalities, so their otherness fades and their beauty as people in the world is what they lead with.
Well, you do it so well. The two of you work beautifully together. Your books are fantastic. This new book, The Better Half, put you two together and you're a whole big bundle of joy. So, now, do you have a website you want people to go to?
Sure. You can find us at www.allieandasha.com and our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Allie and Asha.
Okay. Well, everybody, you will enjoy this book. It put a smile on your face. And I love the cover too. I thought it was really cool. I love it with the hearts and everything. It's really great. Thank you both for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you, and I just want to wish you the best of luck with this. And I hope that now, it's great that COVID's over. I hope that you get to tour together and people get to see you.
So do we? We absolutely.
Because I think partly seeing you together will make people realize that, yeah, you know, everybody's can be different, but we can all, you know, come together in ways where we share fun and we share joy, and the two of you certainly have done that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye bye now. Bye.
Bye bye.
All right. What a lovely. They are so lovely. They are both so lovely. And as I said, I love the cover. And I hope that you'll get this book, because we have to read about different people. We have to read about other people. We have to read about things that we need to learn, and just basically people, we have to read more. And I hope that all of you will take this time this summer, turn off the television. Really, it's ruining your mind. There's a limit. And I think most people after COVID, if they didn't realize it, they should realize it now. Turn off the television, take a book, go to the pool, go to the park, sit under a tree, buy yourself a hammock. You know, I spent half my childhood in a hammock, tied between two birch trees, and that's where I used to be. Everybody knew where they could find me. Every afternoon, I'd run around in the morning like crazy because I was really wild, and run through the forest and do all the picking the berries and all of that stuff out in the wild. Start early in the morning, cut off, and then I'd get back, and the first thing I'd do is in the afternoon, I would get in that hammock, and I would be reading and swinging back and forth all afternoon. There's nothing better than that. So I hope that all of you will think about that and get a good book and read. And I want to, again, recommend Baron Bircher's Reckoning. That book will take you out west. I tell you, you will feel it. It immerses you. It immerses you in the west. And I loved it. I love this book. So I hope that you will get, well, you can't get Reckoning because Reckoning isn't out yet, but you can pre-order it. But go ahead and check out his other two books. His last name is Bircher. So get those two books, and then you'll be ready for September when he's going to be back on the program to talk about the Reckoning. Wow. Again, I want to thank both Bria and Devon for being here, and they will come back. I guess they both want to come back again. They love it here. They love talking on the radio because they love telling you about the books that they love. So I will definitely be telling you about that and more about what's going to happen with them. But meanwhile, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your work on paper or to see and hear it in an audible book or perhaps in a streaming video. And I'm hoping that for quite a few authors lately, I've been having some great authors, and I want to see their work really. It's about time we get some of the authors who have been on Joy on Paper and streaming video, because I have so many good recommendations for them. I'll start with Carol J. Perry for if we want a cozy mystery series. I will definitely start with Baron Bircher for another series about the West. Oh, I've got so many ideas. But I guess have to win the lottery or something so I can get all of these books out there and on film. Anyway, thank you, Big Ed, in the control room for taking care of everybody last week. Everybody loved you, and we really appreciate all you do. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, and that's it. And I am off, and I had a wonderful time last week. Bye-bye.